Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews and discussions on medical conditions that impact lives in ways that most of us never expect. I'm Lita.
And I'm Ron, and collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. Thank you all for joining us today.
We have a very special episode for you. Today, we're talking about working as an autistic adult. And our guest is none other than Dr. Temple Grandin. Thank you, ma'am. Many of you probably know her as a world-renowned researcher, professor, and author. She's done incredible work in animal science, autism, advocacy, and education. Temple, welcome to our show.
It's good to be here.
Thank you. Let's start by giving our listeners a bit of information on your background. If you could, please tell us your early experiences with autism, how it shaped your education, and how you discovered your interest that led you into a career.
Well, I started out no speech until age four. Was very lucky to get into extremely good early intervention. When I got to be about 5 and 6 years old, it became obvious that I was good at art. That was always encouraged. I'm a big believer in take the thing the kid is good at, encourage it, expand it, so it's not quite so fixated. I had a terrible time in high school, bullied and teased, and the only places I had friends was through shared interests, things like horseback riding and model rocket club. I had a wonderful science teacher who got me motivated to study, kind of really give a lot of credit to my mother for teaching me to read when I was 8 years old. Now, I get asked all the time how to end up in the cattle industry.
Yes.
I got exposed to it as a teenager. I did not come from an ag background. So I want to emphasize the importance of students getting out and trying lots of different things. I talk to students all the time now, and I say, get out, help professors with the research. Try lots of different things, because you don't know what you might like, but you also might try something and say, well, I hate that. I don't want to do that. And so I went out to my aunt's ranch and got introduced to the beef industry. And then I went to a special boarding school and they had a small dairy. I learned how to milk cows there. So that was my introduction to cattle. Then another thing that I did that helped get me into the workforce, and I think it also helped Bill Gates, is when I was 9 years old, both Bill and I had to sell stuff for charity, go knock on doors and talk to people. Another thing that was done in my generation, which I think really helped me on talking to people, is when we were 9 years old, we had to dress up in our good clothes and be party hosts and greet the guests. And I'm seeing a lot of just normal kids today. They won't talk to you on the phone. We've got some students right now, and I don't think they're autistic in my class, that they're, you know, flunking out of the course and they won't answer the emails. They won't see me after class. They just don't ask for help. And I think it's like things like learning to talk to me really helped me, because one of my big breakthroughs in getting a career started is I was at a little cattle event in Arizona, and this is when I was first started, and the editor for our State Farm magazine was at this event. And I walked right up to him, just like selling candy for charity, and asked for his card.
Okay.
I said, I'd like to write an article about my thesis research on cattle behavior in different types of squeeze shoots. And I got his card, and I sent him the article, and they published it. And then after that, I said, well, maybe I have to do a column. I went down to their office and pitched doing a column. And I ended up 6 months later becoming the livestock editor. That really helped me get into all kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm realizing now just how important it was to be selling candy for charity when I was 9 years old.
Right.
And being at the parents' parties, because it taught you how to talk to people, which is just so important. And there's a scene in the HBO movie Temple Grandin where I walk up to the editor and I get his card. And that scene is absolutely real. And it's really, really important. You know, now one of the things to do is kind of avoid interviews. An interview for me, well, my articles. I got a reputation that when I covered a cattle feeders meeting, the talks were summarized accurately. I got respect for that. Also, the press pass got me into all kinds of different things. And one of the ways that I sold jobs was to simply show off my drawings. I learned to sell my work rather than myself. That is something that's really, really important. Selling the work. Now I've got to find one of my drawings here in one of my books, and I'm going to show it to you. But selling the work, and I would simply lay out the drawings and show people the drawings. And that is how I sold jobs. Here, I've got it right here in my book on Speaking of Pictures.
Yes.
There are some of my drawings right there.
Okay.
And I showed people my drawings. An interview for me was to lay out the drawings and pictures. Now, you don't want to show these drawings to the HR department. You got to show the drawings to the people that are going to buy the instant buying the handling facility, a plant manager, a feed yard owner. You've got to show them to the right person. And gradually I built up my freelance business.
Okay.
But just, I was so interested that when Bill Gates came out with his book, Source Code, that his upbringing was very similar to mine. And we had to learn to talk to people. Now, where we parted ways is Bill Gates and I both were exposed to the exact same computer. He was a 12-year-old climbing out the window of his house and sneaking into the computer lab. I was in college. I had to drop the class. And Bill Gates took off with it.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
So we both got exposed to the exact same computer. He took off with it because he's a mathematician and I'm not.
Got it. Well, from your experience, are there industries or types of jobs that would be particularly difficult for people to get into if they have autism?
Well, there's like three kinds of autism. And in my book, Visual Thinking, also in my book, The Autistic Brain, I discuss this. They're the visual thinkers like me, object visualizers. We're terrible at math. Now, I worked out in construction for 25 years, supervising the installation of things I had designed. And I worked with big machine shops that were owned by people that were definitely autistic, undiagnosed, and they were very autistic. Much more autistic than some of the people that come up to me at the airport and say they're autistic. A whole lot more autistic. They have big businesses, 20 patents each, all mechanical things. Now, another kind of autistic is the Bill Gates type, mathematician, programmer. Definitely not me. I mean, half of Silicon Valley and, you know, now we've got certain math and people out there where they're paying $100 million for one kid with black curly hair because he's going to be the answer to artificial intelligence.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably on the autism spectrum.
Yep.
Now, another type you have is the word thinker. And the word thinker is the one that knows every fact about certain types of movies or sports teams.
Right.
Okay.
And some of those individuals can be very good at what I call quiet specialized retail, where you work with one person at a time to help them get the right phone, not the most expensive phone. How about the right phone or the right business insurance or the right baseball club? Help them pick out the right piece of merchandise. My kind of thinkers, I know a lot of people working in skilled trades. Skilled trades, they're going to be laughing all the way to the bank as AI takes over more and more jobs, but it's not going to take over the skilled trades. You know, especially the high-end skilled trades. And that's where the visual thinkers can really excel. And the thing you have in autism is you might get an extreme object visualizer like me or an extreme mathematician like Bill Gates. You know, so-called normal people tend to be much more mixtures of different kinds of thinking. Now, I think it's extremely important to learn work skills young. You see, and I'm realizing now, and especially after I read Bill Gates' book just a few months ago, that things like selling candy for charity, where no, mom was not beside me. And when Bill did it, mom would park in front of the house. He had to go up and knock on the door himself and learn how to talk to people.
Okay. For instance, as a Girl Scout, when I was younger, we had to go door to door and sell Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah.
So something like that would introduce me at an early age on talking to people.
Exactly. And the thing I see, okay, the Girl Scouts selling Girl Scout cookies at the local supermarket, but mom's right there and talking to the customers.
Right. That's
where the kids could be talking to the customer.
Right. Yeah. Nowadays, they're doing it at the stores. Yeah.
But the kids should be doing the talking.
I agree.
Or they'll come up to me and get a book signed, and mom says, well, my son would like to get the book signed. Well, the son should be asking to get the book or something.
Absolutely.
I'm seeing too many kids today where they're having everything done for them. They're not learning any basic skills. I'm just appalled at 16-year-old honor students that have never gone shopping by themselves. They haven't learned how to have a debit card. And I'm a little concerned about money getting too abstract with a debit card. I would recommend that they print out the balance really often. And then after they buy a bunch of stuff, they print it out again so that it's not so abstract.
I would say that there's a lot to be said about the education system because that plays into it as well. But as an adult, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see for adults with autism? For example, holding a job.
Well, let's just look at being on time.
Okay.
I was just at a veterinary college talking to students, and this one girl said she was on, because of her OCD or whatever, she was always late to work. And that was something I didn't have a problem with that. Now, I would recommend using real clocks with hands rather than digital, because I've been hearing some stuff from some autism consultants about time blindness. And I think the clock with hands shows the passage of time better than digital does, because you can go, okay, 7 o'clock, I have breakfast, noon, I have lunch. And you can get these great big clocks and you can still get them where the second hand goes around and the minute hand goes click and you can actually see it move.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped me when I was a child learn about the passage of time. Now, another thing is hygiene. There's a scene in the HBO movie where they slam down the deodorant. That actually happened. And at the time, I was really upset. No, I thank that boss now. You got to clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
That is one thing that's just non-negotiable. Be on time, got to clean it up. And what I recommended to the girl that wasn't on time, and she's working in a veterinary clinic, and if they have an 8 o'clock surgery scheduled, she's got to be there. You can't be half an hour late.
Right.
I said, why don't you just start your work at 7? So if the clinic opens at 8, you're going to just be there at 7. And sometimes you'll get there at 7, sometimes you won't, but then you won't be late for the 8 o'clock when it opens.
Right, right.
And just maybe that's the thing to do.
Okay.
Because these sorts of things, you just have got to do. Now, the other thing that would save a lot of jobs is pilot's checklists. Written checklists on how to do tasks written out in a pilot's checklist format. Because if somebody just goes, yak, 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 this is how you clean the espresso machine, I will not be able to remember the steps. And the autistic person needs to write it down, say, look, pilots need a checklist. I need one too. Let me just write down the 6 steps for cleaning the machine.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
And I can write them just down in bullet points.
Okay.
That would save a lot of jobs.
Okay.
Bosses get really angry. They go, I already showed you how to clean that machine 5 times. Are you stupid? No, that's where you make your own checklist.
Okay.
That would save a ton of jobs. Also, I'd avoid what I call a chaos jobs, a completely crazy busy takeout window. Tons of multitasking, trying to remember orders on that. I just call them chaos jobs. I can think of a specific example that was a failure. It was an 18-year-old girl at Christmas time in a super busy Gap store, and that did not work. Well, let's not start the jobs during the holidays when the stores are just crazy.
Another good point. So as far as timing for getting into the job field, don't get
it. No, I wouldn't do it
right
during the Christmas rush.
Right.
I remember Barnes & Noble, our bookstore, normally be a wonderful place for an autistic student to work.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Not their Christmas wrapping station. I remember going in there and watching that Christmas wrapping station and going, that's where I'm not going to put them. It was chaos.
Yeah.
And it would have been so easy to wrap up the wrong book. Then somebody's going to be upset about that.
Uh-huh.
But the other times a year, a Barnes & Noble or some other bookstore would be a wonderful place to work. Let's just not do it right before Christmas.
Good. Good advice. How about social interactions between the autistic worker and the other employees and also the boss? How do they...
Well, one of the things that does not work, vagueness does not work. You can't just say you're rude to coworkers. On my very first job, I criticized some welding, and I said it looked like pigeon doo-doo. A plant engineer, he was a perfect job coach. He pulled me right into his office and he said, Whitey the welder is up in the cafeteria right now. And you're going right up there right now and you're going to apologize for rude talk. I don't have to tell him the welding's wonderful, but I'm going to apologize for the rude talk. He told me exactly what to do.
Okay.
And all right, you don't just say you're rude to customers. I was at the vet thing. I said, well, you just told Mrs. Jones her dog was going to croak. That's an example of how not to break bad news to client. And they actually, in the veterinary profession, they have some little scripts that people can use when they have to deliver bad news.
Okay.
Well, I would give them those.
All right.
And I said, you might watch Susan, how she deals with customers. Same thing in a store, working with customers. Watch Susie, how she does it.
Okay.
But you have to be very specific
yeah.
on what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Real specific feedback. Vagueness doesn't work. Another time that's very dangerous for the person on the spectrum is changing bosses. I almost lost my job at the magazine when the magazine was sold and we got a new boss. And unfortunately, a lot of my articles were not bylined. So the boss didn't know how much stuff I'd actually written. He just thought it was really weird. But fortunately, Susan, who worked in the graphic design, recognized that Jim, the new boss, didn't like me. He says, we got to make a big scrapbook of all your articles and show them to Jim. And when he saw how many articles I'd written, he gave me a raise. But I almost would have lost a job if Susie hadn't warned me.
Okay.
Changing bosses. I've seen that over and over again of being a dangerous time.
Okay. And then what do autistic adults bring to the workplace that's unique and valuable that a non-autistic person might not?
Attention to detail.
Okay.
Attention to detail. Okay. Like the visualizers like me who are not the mathematicians, really able to build things. All right, let's look at these metalworking shops. And the thing that's happened, the people I worked with have retired out. They're not being replaced. The largest construction company in the world is concerned about how they're going to replace some of these highly, highly skilled tradespeople. And we don't have anybody to fix things now. They're playing video games in the basement. And I'm going to really, for the visual thinker like me, the person who can't do algebra and math, I'm going to really push the trades because you're going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
Excellent.
As other white-collar jobs get eliminated.
Excellent.
But the people I worked with are not being replaced, and some of them are very autistic. I'll never forget the day that one of the guys I worked with, he built a bunch of stuff for me. I had to drag him out of the plant's shop before he mouthed off with the plant engineer. I said, let's go out of here. And I dragged his butt out of that shop before we both and I get fired. But he was very good at what he did. He had 20 patents. Most of them have expired now, but they're still being used. Really good patents, not silly patents, good patents, but mechanical things. And so that's the object visualizer like me. And what worries me, since we can't do algebra because there's no pictures to remember, I'm concerned about us getting screened out. And if you'd like the water system to work in the town, I'll tell you right now, you're going to need us non-mathematicians. Then you have the mathematical mind. And the bad thing that's going on right now in the computer industry is a lot of the low-level jobs, like beginner programming jobs, are going to get done by AI. And then they're paying $100 million to some guy with black curly hair because he's got the secret of AI. And he's probably on the spectrum.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm concerned about the AI stuff. And the hands-on jobs, like a nurse,
okay,
it's not going to go away.
Right, right.
You know, these hands-on jobs, teacher, we're still going to need teachers to work with kids and personal relationships. That's not going to go away. But there's a lot of jobs, scheduling jobs, that's going to get done more and more by AI. All kinds of scheduling jobs that used to be just done totally manually.
So thank you for sharing some of the strengths. Do you have any specific success stories, either your own or people that you know, where those strengths that you just mentioned?
Well, I told you about these machine shops,
yep.
Right? These were big businesses. They were building things for major, major beef companies, major, inventing pieces of equipment. I know a guy that has two corporate jets Took a welding class, can't do any algebra. He's building beef plants. Now, he just finished up a big beef plant, and they can't find anybody to fix it. You know, he texted me 2 weeks ago. He said, I don't know how my beautiful new plant is going to run on new. There's nobody to fix it.
So a lot of the success stories that you've seen are based on the strengths that you have yourself, right? Visual?
Yeah, I'm the visual thinker.
Right.
But there's still going to be a need for a local hospital to have an IT person to help people with all the computer problems.
Okay.
You're still going to need that person. And I've seen those people where they were definitely undiagnosed autistics. I remember one of them, he worked for a major big meat company. And I visited their corporate office. He was just as autistic as he could be. And he was probably very good at what he did.
Okay. And if there are known challenges and known strengths, what kind of strategies can autistic adults use to succeed at work besides making a checklist? Are there any other strengths?
Well, the checklist will save a ton of jobs.
Okay.
All right. The other thing, two people got fired for, one from an art museum and one from an engineering company. The instant the person got into the engineering company, they were spending all that time on autism activism. I think when you first go into an engineering company, you better spend a lot of time doing some really good engineering. And they got into too much activism stuff. And then the other person was hired to advertise an art gallery on Facebook and other social media. And she poked her nose into every fight that other employees got in with the company. You know, sometimes it's better off to just knuckle down and do your own work.
Okay.
Stay in your own lane.
Just knuckle down, turn out the work. Okay. And another thing I would recommend is protect your portfolio. On engineering, I would keep copies of my work in paper at home.
Okay. All right.
I would keep copies of some of my best Facebook pages in paper at home. Protect your portfolio.
Okay. Good.
Protect your job evaluations, your good ones. Print them out at home in paper. But on the other hand, I think it would be a good idea to leave the politics at home. Don't bring that to work.
Absolutely.
Just don't bring that stuff to work.
Right.
I don't.
Right.
And I'm not going to discuss it now.
If you focus on the job, I think you're better off.
Yeah, focus on the job. Now, there's certain things I won't do. I worked for a feedlot construction company. This is back when I first started, and I did their advertising. And the company was going broke. And I found out they weren't paying for the ads that I placed in the cattle magazines. Okay, I'm not going to steal for them. I quit. Because placing those ads, you know, maybe quarter pages in Beef Magazine, I knew that they weren't going to pay for them.
Oh.
They also advertised a piece of equipment that absolutely did not exist, too. And I was handling the advertising. I'm going, wait a minute, I can't advertise a piece of equipment that's a fantasy. Yeah, there's a point where if I'm doing the Facebook page for an art museum and it's a really nice art museum, then I just do that. Now, the other thing I think an autistic person has to learn is that even the best workplaces will have some stuff wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There'll be people you hate.
Okay.
There'll be something somebody did you'll think's unfair. And the difference between the good places and the bad places is the good places have less of these problems. But they are still going to have some problems. And there'll be no workplace that's perfect. You know, and the girl that was doing the Facebook page and social media, she should have just knuckled down and built traffic in that museum with her work on social media. And I would have kept track of that.
Okay.
I would have kept track of the hits that it got. I would have gotten the attendance going into the museum that my stuff I did online increased the traffic in that museum. And, you know, so like, it's like when I almost lost my job at the magazine, I had unbylined articles. And when I showed them all to the boss, the new boss, he gave me a raise. But sometimes, just knuckle down and do the job. That's one of the first things you probably better do. Now, there's a point where bad stuff gets so bad that maybe you do have to quit. I am not going to place ads that I know we're not going to get paid for. And this was real early in my career. I was in my 20s. When all the things I'm telling you right now were in my 20s when I started.
So The question I have, and we talked about some of the strengths and some of the challenges that face people that have autism. Now, let's shift the focus over to the employer. What are some accommodations or practices that they can put into place to assist an employee that has autism to be successful in their job?
All right, let's get rid of the LED lights that flicker. Big number one.
Okay.
And this is going to be a problem for maybe 10% of all the employees across the board in an office. Because your head injury, people can have that. Some of your dyslexics. Yep. I would say 20% of the autistics are going to have problems with LEDs flickering. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how to find them. Pull this thing out right here.
Cell phone?
Put the iPhone on slow motion video and videotape the room. You'll find the lights that flicker. So what do we do? Let's say we've got an office building. They got rented space, so they can't change the lights. No windows, because if there's windows, put the autistic person's desk over by the window. If they don't have windows, then what we do is we're going to go to the lamp store and find an LED that does not flicker, a real bright one, and put that next to the person's desk and have them wear a hat.
Okay.
So those are two simple things you can do if I can't get rid of the LED lights in an office.
Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, some people have covered them up with right over there, just a piece of paper or something. But that's probably the number one issue that would be something wrong with the environment.
Right, right. How about noise?
And noise, yep, that you can have noise-canceling headsets. Now, the thing is, if you wear a headset all the time, it will make sound sensitivity worse.
Mm.
That's the problem. Have you ever had wax taken out of your ears and the doctor took the wax out and then it sounded loud?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the brain compensating for the wax.
Okay, okay.
Anyone's had a ton of wax taken out of the ears will have experienced this.
Sure.
Well, it's the same thing. You wear the headphone all the time. Now, have them with you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a loud fire alarm or something like that, then you can put it on.
Ironically, that's exactly what I have at my school right now, is we have a student with autism, and we just had multiple fire drills in a row. And it was very bothersome to him. And it's exactly what we're going to be doing, is giving him or making certain that he has available to him head-canceling headphones in case this happens again. So that
then you have it with you.
Yeah.
You see, that gives you control.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, you said, well, how's the autistic people going to work in a metal shop with all the noisy machinery? Well, when they make the noise, it's a lot better tolerated. So you take them down to the shop and nobody's there. All right, here's the electric drill. I want you to drill holes in plastic, wood, metal, everything noisy that can be to drill a hole in. If it's a little kid, let them turn on the vacuum cleaner, the hair dryer, whatever the noisy thing is, where they control it.
Okay.
And that can sometimes desensitize.
Okay. Awesome.
Good suggestion.
That can sometimes desensitize where they turn on the electric drill. Or if it's a little kid, the vacuum cleaner.
Because they have control over it.
They have control over it. And that can often really help.
So this actually...
Because I worked on a job, one of our jobs, and the welders were like welding the steel fence. And then I chipped the slag off the welds with a little chipping hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize at the time, I was driving this guy crazy. Now, if he chipped his own welds off, chip the slag off, that was fine, but he didn't like me doing it.
Got it.
Okay.
And I think he probably was autistic when I look back on it now.
Okay. That actually leads me to my next question. We talked about the individual. We talked about the employer. What about institutional supports, like the Americans with Disabilities Act? Is there anything in there or any
laws that protect? Is that what you're...
Yeah, just...
Yeah, the thing is, you have all the laws on wheelchair access. I can tell you right now, they just built a brand new airport. And I went into what's supposed to be the wheelchair accessible stall. I don't know how a wheelchair could get in there. I mean, and I'm a designer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brand new airport. And that wasn't laid out correctly.
Yeah.
No, I don't think somebody did that on purpose.
The ABA accepted.
They just, no.
Right.
I mean, other things like at the Denver airport that was built 35 years ago, on the stalls aren't big enough to roll your bag inside easily. Now, our new terminal, the new terminal extensions, they put an extra foot on the length of the stall, and then you can easily roll your bag in the stall.
Right.
Which I really like.
Yeah.
You know, this is I lay stuff out. I'm cattle handling designing, airport designing somewhere, but just things like the restrooms. I don't think it's a beautiful new airport. And the wheelchair access stalls are horrible in that airport. That's brand new.
Would you say
nobody did that on purpose?
Right.
You know, they just didn't know.
Right. I had one question about individuals who are very early in their career or their journey, and they're considering making a change. You're like, they're already working somewhere, but maybe they want to go somewhere else or get a promotion or, you know, maybe changing career fields completely because they're not happy where they're at. Do you have any suggestions on how they
could? Well, one thing I don't want to say, a lot of good techies that are probably on the spectrum are ruined when they're promoted to management. And this has been brought up for years and years and years in the computer industry. You take a really good programmer, ruin them, then making them a manager. You know, there needs to be a pathway for, you know, tech to advance. And the other thing is, grass is not always greener on the other side of the fence. One of the things that helped me was the slow transition from the world of school to the world of work. When I was in high school, I was cleaning 9 stalls every day, learning how to work. And slow transitions are usually better than rapid ones.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at Franklin Pierce College, a little tiny, small startup college, and I had my great science teacher, Mr. Carlock, all I could think about was graduate school at the big university. And I thought graduate school would have James Bond labs. I can't believe I actually believe this. This is stupid. But I didn't realize how lucky I was to go to a small college until I went to Arizona State for my master's. Now, the classes there were reasonable size for master's, but I watched 500 freshmen line up for a 500-student math or English class.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I was glad I went to a small school. No, grass was not greener on the undergraduate side of the fence.
Okay.
You know, so they come out, you don't want to be in a job that you absolutely hate. And there's a point where you have a horrible boss. And that just gets, even with non-autistic, I've seen some very sad stuff. One of my former students, she had a beautiful job. And then her husband got another job somewhere else. And she went to the same place and it was absolutely awful. And it was the boss. And she's not autistic. It just awful mess. I can't go into the details.
Oh, right.
But the thing that they have to learn is that no workplace will be perfect. Now there's a point where your boss is so terrible that you just about got to quit.
Yep.
But there's other things. You know, like I talked to a lady, she had a classified high-end job on spy satellites. Now she couldn't tell me that, but I found out somebody else, she was designing spy satellites. And this was back before Maxar technology hit the scenes and you can buy those photographs commercially now. And she had a major in physics, electrical engineering, and math. And they snapped her right up. And she quit this job. And I really chewed her out. And I said, okay, now I know what you did is classified. You can't tell me what you did. But you can tell me the environment. Was it on a computer in an office? Yes. Was the work boring? No. Was the work so hard you couldn't do it? No. Did you have a good boss? Yes. Did you have good coworkers? Yes. Was there anything wrong with the office environment? No. Well, why'd you quit that job? Well, she didn't like being away from home, and she made enough money she could fly home an hour flight every weekend if she wanted to. She says, I just didn't like it. And I got really mad and I chewed her out. That's not a good reason for quitting that job. You know, and you're not going to get another job as good as that one.
Right.
And she didn't have, she says, I just didn't like it. I said, what are you going to do about health insurance?
Mm-hmm.
I said, did you have a good boss? Yes. Did you have good colleagues? Did you have a quiet place to work? Yes. That kind of questions aren't classified. What she did on the computer was classified.
Right, right.
But the environment and everything, it was all an office environment. You know, was the people there mean to you? No. Were you doing work that you ethically felt was unethical? There's some things I would not do.
Sure.
She was not designing weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found out later on the company that she worked for made spy satellites. And they prevent war. They show what's going on the ground.
Right, right.
They're not a weapon. And so she wasn't morally opposed to what the company did. And she walked out of this beautiful job that she was absolutely qualified for. And I let her have it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She wasn't speaking at
that. The thing that people have got to learn is there's going to be some stuff wrong at a job.
Right.
What you have to do is kind of put it on the scales of justice. The good outweigh the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a point where a horrible boss,
mm-hmm.
and I had a really good friend of mine, she had a horrible boss. She ended up quitting, and she wasn't autistic. Won't let you do anything. There's a point where, you know, she had to quit, but went and did something else. But the thing that they got to learn is that no job will be perfect.
Right.
That actually leads me into a question. And I mean, I'm not sure if you mentioned the age of this lady that would had the spy satellite.
Oh, yeah. She had the perfect major. You know, what the companies really like, they love electrical engineering mixed with physics, mixed with computer science and math, all mixed together.
And she was young?
Perfect mix of skills.
Yeah.
But she was younger, correct?
Yeah, she would have been an undergraduate.
Okay. So,
bachelor's degree in engineering.
And that's great for her that she had all of that. Probably just not enough experience to know at the time.
Well, she didn't realize how good she had it.
Exactly. However,
I mean, that was part of the problem.
Okay. Now, but talking about other students just coming out of undergrad work, or even kids coming out of high school that are trying to enter the workforce.
This is where they might need to be pushing some grocery carts. And the thing where a lot of job counselors don't differentiate is where pushing grocery carts is a training job.
Right.
Not a career. But it'd be a really good training job.
And a lot of these jobs, especially out of college more so, you're going to be doing a lot of interviewing for jobs, and it's going to be competitive.
I'd try to short circuit that. Half of all jobs are backdoor. And you see, an interview for me, since my service that I sold was designing equipment.
Right.
I just showed off the drawings and showed off the pictures.
Okay, so you're saying that you don't have to go through the interview process.
Well, I would just lay the drawings out on the table to the feedlot owner or the rancher, and this is what I do.
Yeah.
For the average person, though, that has autism coming out of high school or college looking to work, and this is a key thing, and because I work with students who use wheelchairs, okay, this is something that is discussed with them. However, for somebody that has, call it an invisible disability, right, they're not in a wheelchair, no assistive device, when do you think it's appropriate to let your employer or potential employer know that you do have autism? Because you certainly, in my opinion, don't want to offer that information too early, because that could...
Or you can just say, pilots need a checklist, I need one too.
Okay.
And leave it at that. Because I found a lot of jobs have been lost over that long strings of verbal instruction. Like, there was a guy who'd worked for years building fencing. I talked to him at a conference, and the company got sold, new boss, yak, 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 and he built the wrong fences, and they fired him. You see, that's something where if he had just written it down.
Okay.
Written down which answers you're supposed to build that day.
Okay. Before this interview, we asked our listeners to send in some questions.
Okay.
And here is one of them. How do autistic adults know if a job is going to be a good fit before accepting it?
Well, it's sometimes difficult. You know, you know, the job I have at Feedlot Construction Company was a good fit until they started not paying for ads. You see, that wasn't true in the beginning. I worked there for almost 2 years, and they were paying for their ads. It was when they stopped paying for their ads. That it was a problem.
Right, but if they walk in and they're qualified for the job, as far as the physical job, and yet they want to know, will they fit in with the other employees, with the noises, with the lights, with the scheduling? Can they test the water somehow?
Well, the thing is, a lot of jobs, you take a lot of construction jobs, they're not that multitasking. Okay, if you're on a bridge and you're tying rebar, you're welding rebar on a bridge, you're not multitasking. You know, if you're doing those kinds of jobs, and then when it gets to people that do stuff to you, there's kind of two kinds of horrible bosses. There's a horrible boss that treats everybody terrible, everybody hates, and there's a horrible boss that picks out the people that are different and tortures them. And that can be really difficult. There can be some jobs that can be just boring. I was reading jobs about jobs that people in China, you know, driving Ubers and, you know, delivering food and things like that. And one guy said, I hated this job in a phone factory where I just had to screw little screws into phone parts. And it was so boring.
Sure.
There might be somebody else on the spectrum that might love that job.
Right. And that was another question.
They might absolutely love that job, and they're going to be super careful to make sure that phone parts are put together correctly with these little screws.
Right.
And whoever buys that phone is going to appreciate that. And then there are some autistic people where that'd be a perfect job for them, screwing little tiny screws into phone parts.
Yeah. If somebody has a sensory overload, what can they do to control that environment?
Noise-canceling headset. That's one of the things they can do. Now, there's a few places where there'd be some safety issues where they wouldn't be able to hear. If it was a job on an assembly line, that would not be an issue.
Okay.
Noise-canceling headsets. And then the other big thing is lights that flicker. Now, that doesn't bother me. See, I would say maybe 20% of autistic people have problems with lights that flicker. That's the number one thing I'd like to get rid of.
Okay.
In either a factory environment or an office.
Okay.
Because the noise, you can put on noise-canceling headsets.
Got it.
You know, you can do that.
Before we wrap up, what are your single biggest takeaways for our listeners, either the autistic adults or the employers that are going to be hiring them?
One thing with employers, don't be fake. Let's say the person shows up for work and their hygiene is terrible. You're going to need to take them in private, in the office, and you're going to have to tell them they're going to have to clean it up. I talked to a lady running a vet clinic, and she says, I got one tech, and she's such a good tech. And she's autism, but she never takes a shower. And I said, you need to take her into the office and say she's going to have to clean it up. Or they say, this scrub uniform itches. Well, there's a zillion different scrub uniforms. Wash them 3 times before you wear them. They have all kinds of scrub, you know, and they got cute puppies and stuff on them. Find one that doesn't itch.
Okay.
And wash them. You have to wear the scrub uniform, but there's a zillion choices. But the hygiene has to be cleaned up. That's one thing. Even on a construction site, just come in stinking up a yell, then you walk in the job trailer and nobody wants to be near you. That you've got to clean it up. I dress kind of eccentric. That's fine. Purple hair is fine. Rude, dirty slob is not fine. And being on time. You know, if you're doing, you've got to show up. Don't be half an hour late. There was a movie theater manager I talked to, and she had this great autistic guy that the patrons loved to talk to him about all the different movies. They loved him.
Yeah.
But he was always really late for work.
Oh.
And there's a point where an employer can't deal with that.
Right, right. They can't support it. Right.
You need to have the people there because his job also was to take tickets as they walked in.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want him just walking in. Somebody had to be there to take the tickets. But the three things that you're getting a lot of people fired are the long strings of verbal information don't work. Write it down in a checklist format. Aviation figured out eons ago that prevented a lot of airplane accidents. On boss giving very clear feedback. Don't just say you're rude to colleagues. You need to take them aside in private and say exactly what they did. On the total multitasking chaos jobs. Yeah, we're not doing the Barnes & Noble wrapping table at Christmas time. We'll do Barnes & Noble other times of the year. That's a bookstore. These are some of the things that come up over and over and over again where jobs have been lost. And the autistic person does need to show up on time, and you can't be a filthy, dirty slob. And the other thing is, let's cut the radical political crap out. Just don't bring it to work. Then the other thing the autistic person's got to learn is there'll be things wrong, even in the best jobs. They're not going to be perfect. You know, maybe Susie smokes in the break room. All right, it's not worth tattling to the boss over that. They're going to just hate you for that. Just deal with it. I had some friction with employees. Because I tattled when I saw people doing stuff wrong. They didn't follow a procedure. And I did some tattling. And I shouldn't have. It's sort of like, you know, they see somebody breaking some little rule. I've learned not to do that. Now, if it's something really dangerous, yes.
Sure.
Then I'm going to, you know, say something about it. But no job is perfect.
That's true.
Yep, absolutely.
And even in the best jobs, there's going to be some things wrong.
Right.
Now, for the person that has the flickering light problem, I had a student that had that problem. And, you know, it's fluorescent lights, which fortunately are getting phased out. And she got migraines and stuff from this. You see, one of the things you could just disclose to the boss, those lights just give me headaches.
There you go. Right. Right.
You can just, because that's something where there are some people that just cannot tolerate that.
Right.
In office or in a factory.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Grandin. We really appreciate talking to you today.
Well, it's been good to talk to you, and hope I've just given some tips, because I've worked with a lot of autistic people. Let me just finish up one last thing. Grandparents talk to me all the time.
Okay.
And they tell me they've discovered they're autistic when the kids get diagnosed. They all had good jobs. They had paper routes when they were young. If you got young kids now, let's do paper route substitutes. They got to start learning how to do a job for somebody outside the home that's the boss. You walk Mr. Jones's dog.
Right.
You do a church volunteer job. So you learn how to work for somebody outside the home. High school kids need to be getting jobs. But again, it's never too late. And if they're in college, well, they need to get some jobs when they're in college. Even that means going a little more slowly. So you don't have a sudden shift from the world of school to the world of work.
Right.
I had a gradual shift from school to working.
Okay.
That was definitely helpful because the farm and ranchman job, the livestock editor, was a part-time job. You know, so but these grandparents, they'd all had decent jobs. And you know, having paper routes when they were 11 really helped.
Yeah, we need to get those days back.
Well, we need to find some substitutes. You walk the Jones's dog. I talked to one mom, her 12-year-old has become the entertainment director for the nursing home that he can walk to.
Nice.
Does bingo nights and things. These are things that cost nothing to implement and just done in the neighborhood.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
It's been great to talk to you.
And also keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay informed, and we'll see you next time on Podcast DX.
Till next week.